This is the Popmatic Podcast for March 2nd, 2016.
Maybe some of you have come to Hogwarts in possession of abilities so formidable that you feel confident enough to not pay attention.
The Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. 100 items on that card. That's insane.
That's a lot.
Whoa. So many.
I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Mark.
Bill, excuse me for coughing.
Jeremy, excuse me for Jeremy.
That's funny, because it's true.
Which one? Alan Rickman passed away on the 16th of January, 2016. He was a fantastic actor who you may know from movies like Die Hard, Robin Hood, Sense and Sensibility, and a little something called Harry Potter. He's in that Michael Collins biopic, too. He's really good in that.
Oh, Michael Collins?
Yep. Why are we talking about Mr. Rickman now? Because we're drunk with power, and we can.
That's right. Welcome.
Bill.
Okay.
Can you talk down to us through a great accent?
Not today.
Yeah.
I'll start coughing.
With a vengeance.
Alfred Hitchcock once stated, "The more successful the villain, the more successful the picture." In 1988, the action movie Die Hard was released. Alan Rickman was cast as Hans Gruber, leader of a group of terrorists who have taken over the Nakatomi Corporation.
It's Christmas Eve in L.A.
California.
Is Daddy coming home, Sue?
Well, we'll see what Santa and Mommy can do, okay?
A New York cop, John McLean, has come to see his wife.
I missed you.
Instead, he's going to have to save her.
Sit down.
Within this skyscraper high above the city, 12 terrorists have declared war.
They're about to be taught a lesson in the real use of power.
They're as brilliant.
Because I am interested in the $640 million in your vault.
As they are ruthless.
And I'm telling you, you're just going to have to kill me.
Okay. We do it the hard way.
Now, the last thing McLean wants.
Think, damn it, think.
Is to be a hero.
Where's Holly?
Hey, Tucker!
Where?
But he doesn't have a choice.
What does he think he's doing?
Job.
They have already killed one hostage.
This channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Hey, do I sound like I'm wearing a pizza?
He's inside? Who is he?
He's not on your side!
Who are you then? You are most troublesome for a security guard.
Sorry, wrong guess, huh? Would you like to go for double jeopardy?
Do anything you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
You just destroyed a building.
And I am in charge of this situation.
Well, I got some bad news for you. From up here, it doesn't look like you're in charge of Jack.
He is alone, he is tired, and he hasn't seen Disney Squad from anybody down here.
Hey, pal, how you feeling?
With all things being equal, I'd rather be in Philadelphia.
I want blood,
and you'll have it.
Only John can drive somebody that crazy.
He's an easy guy to like.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
And a hard man to kill. Bruce Willis. Die Hard.
Got invited to the Christmas party by mistake. Who knew?
Die Hard was Alan Rickman's first feature movie role. Mr. Rickman at the time was 42 years old. Up to that time, he was known for stage work, and he had done some television roles on British television. Alan Rickman had stated it was his dream to come to Hollywood and make a big feature film. And I believe I'm right about this, but Alan Rickman was seen in the Broadway production of Dangerous Liaisons, which John Malkovich played the part in the movie role. Rickman was performing on stage, and they found their Hans. Interesting to note, Bruce Willis up to that time was known as a comedic actor and not an action star.
Yeah, moonlighting.
Moonlighting, yeah. And I honestly think that Rickman made Willis the action star he is today. Willis is from New York, is a New York cop who by the end of the movie is a total mess. While the Rickman character, Hans, is almost an aristocrat. He's charming, funny, wickedly evil, the perfect contrast for the actor from Jersey. According to the AFI, Hans Gruber is one of the top villains of all times. Now, if you're one of the individuals who have yet to see Die Hard, take your library card, drive out to the Southeast Branch, check out Die Hard from the video bank machine, and have a great time and tell them Bill sent you. Jeremy?
If I'd been thinking ahead for this show or thinking more ahead, I think it would have been fun, Mike, if you and I talked about Galaxy Quest together, because I've never seen Galaxy Quest still.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And, what games?
Well, when it came out, yes. I thought, hey, the Home Improvement guy, the guy from Wings, and Ripley from Ghostbusters in space.
Ripley from Ghostbusters.
Ripley from Ghostbusters.
Nice.
And they're on a spaceship.
I'm not throwing my coffee on you right
That's
now.
That's fine. I thought, I don't care about that.
I'm not doing that.
I didn't want to see,
It's funny and sweet.
Well, I think I have heard that since then and like want to see it but just haven't done it. And I think at that point, this was 1999, like the winter of 1999.
So listeners probably don't know yet that Mike is planning on talking about Galaxy Quest today.
Spoiler alert.
I thought I just said that. Didn't I just say that?
You implied that.
Well, the implication.
No worries.
Yeah. Let me make it explicit,
so,
Mike.
So what was young Jeremy like in the winter of 1999? Let's get more tangenty.
Jeremy didn't want to see movies with spaceships. Jeremy didn't want to see movies with spaceships because The Phantom Menace had come out the previous summer.
Really? That just ruined you on science fiction.
I love that movie.
It ruined me on parliamentary procedure.
I was 19, and I was probably very lonely, and that was probably all that was happening. I was living in the dorms and at college, and I was miserable. But I apparently missed the boat on that movie, so I want to see it. So anyway, I was like not sure what I wanted to talk about because I'm not a Harry Potter person. Bill, I knew, was doing Die Hard. But before I gave up my search, I learned that Alan Rickman starred in the much maligned 2013 film CBGB, which scored a whopping 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That is hard to do.
Nothing but
bad things.
So hard to do. Well, I decided to subject myself to it.
Country and blues.
In New York City.
This club's gonna be different.
Play some real music.
And this band is Talking Heads.
We're Blondie.
We're the Ramones.
We're the Dead Boys.
Patti Smith Group.
Lou Reed.
You're a rock star.
What does CBGBs stand for?
Country Bluegrass Blues.
We have a band.
CBGB gets new customers buying drinks. You get to play for an audience. You might want to consider an exterminator.
They're not very country.
Hard to get Conway Twitty down to the Bowery.
You have no idea what's about to happen here.
You gotta spend money to make money.
You gotta have money to spend money to make money.
We've had some complaints.
I'm not a very patient man, so I suggest you give me what I came here for.
You treat me right, I'll treat you right.
How you been, Liz?
Call me that.
City's cracking down.
Hillel Crystal. Divorced. Two bankrupts.
I've been thinking I should start managing some of those bands.
I am going to get them a record deal, and they are going to be big.
These kids have something to say. We really should listen.
You're punks. Anything bad, anything wrong, you want to do it.
What are you doing?
Investing.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
We got bills to pay.
You have no vision, Merv.
What happens to the cash at the end of the night?
I put it in the freezer.
Why would you save for your dreams?
Why not live your dreams?
Nobody is gonna like you guys, but I'll have you back.
We got four songs. I don't want to walk around with you. I don't want to be tame.
Anything you want to do?
We're working on something now.
Something positive?
Yeah, it's called I Want to Sniff Some Glue.
Clean those toilets. They're disgusting.
Your dog is crapping everywhere. This is not a kennel.
You're gonna want to crank it.
Uh-oh. Not a bad night.
Nearly electrocuted a guy.
Doubled the attendance.
CBGB. Country. Bluegrass. Blues.
But without all that country, bluegrass, or blues.
You play too loud. I'm walking out.
So in CBGB, Rickman plays Hilly Crystal, a thrice bankrupt bar owner and misanthrope who grew up on a chicken farm and keeps his money in the freezer. Rickman plays Crystal as this disheveled, beaten down guy who looks like he's like perpetually waking up from a nap. And it's really an odd choice for the lead character in a film. But he really kind of holds this movie together. Well, would hold it together if the movie was actually good. But he like really makes watching it sort of entertaining. He is the other component along with the music, which makes this movie worth seeing, because like he really, all these other people are sort of like, hey, I'm in a movie and all my dialogue is like the caption from a photograph. And it really is just sort of pointing to some sort of historical moment. And he's like, I think we should open the bar later or whatever. You know, give that cop.
Hi, my name is Joey Ramone of the band. You may have heard of the Ramones.
Yeah. let's give this guy a free drink. So like I said, like some of the scenes are just him. Like it's like lots of montages in this film. Some of the scenes are just him standing in front of a crowd of screaming weirdos saying, the shirts, the Ramones. The Dead Boy, like just listing band names, so which is kind of
it's
ridiculous.
It's like your perfect movie.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's really odd. But even then, it's like he's just sort of standing, like looking like I said, like he woke up from a nap.
Why are they in this movie?
Yeah, kind of, but also like, but still like really giving
a paycheck film.
It's not even a dynamic performance. It's just like what a performance this is, and it is a performance, not an impression, which is what so many people do in biopics. Like Ray or whatever other like biopics that are popular. So Billy Crystal.
I was going to say,
fresh off soap.
Hilly Crystal, who is also not on soap, if you catch my meaning, Hilly Crystal takes a chance on a dive bar, which he eventually names CBGB. This is your history of the film. CBGB is an acronym for Country, Bluegrass, and Blues. And then under that on the sign is Umfug, which is other music for uplifting gormandizers.
Wow.
Yeah. And when Rickman delivers this line in the film of like, here's what Umfug stands for, he says it like, this is ridiculous. It's, I don't know. It's like, in anyone else's hands, it would probably be completely stupid, but he sells it. He really sells it. So Crystal's little hole in the wall turns out to be the Temple Mount of American punk rock, providing an early home for bands like Blondie, Television, Ramones, Talking Heads, and the Dead Boys. And these bands are all pretty different, but you know, the one thing they shared was this space on New York's Bowery, this dirty little hole in the wall club in New York that's now a John Varvatos store because punk rock is truly dead. So Rickman really is sort of like he's the most solid thing in the film, aside from the music, which was already great. And really like all anyone had to do was hit play and then have it go. So hats off to the director, Randall Miller. But he also directed the pilot episode of the beloved Nickelodeon show Salute Your Shorts.
Kempanawana. We hold you in our hearts.
So at least, that's right. Yeah. So like I said, the music is fantastic. Every scene, every cut in the film is like an excuse for a new music cue. So you're getting like Sonic Reducer in one thing, and then you're getting Life During Wartime. And then the one fallback is apparently they did not have the rights to any of the Ramones songs.
Whoa.
So any of the performances of the Ramones in the film are playing stuff from Joey Ramone's posthumously released solo album, which is absurd. Or actually, cool. No, it's from his first solo album, which came out, I think, when he was still alive. But I could be wrong about that. Anyway, that's kind of silly. And so, unfortunately, the Ramones do not play a large part in it. But there's some guys doing, like, pretending to be Television on stage. And that's great. There's also the always charming Donald Logue as a CB's employee named Merv Ferguson. And Freddie Rodriguez plays Idaho, a violin playing junkie. And then there are other actors like Malin Ackerman pretending to be Debbie Harry and Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters. pretending like he's Iggy Pop. So if you want to get to know Hilly Crystal's world a little better, you can check out the book, CBGB, 30 Years from the Home of Underground Rock. It's a collection of photographs featuring Elvis Costello hanging out with Richard Hell, Klaus Nomi hanging out with the young Jim Jarmusch, and Edith Massey from Pink Flamingos, like, snarling at the camera. You can also get go one better and check out Punk, the Best of Punk magazine by John Holmstrom and Bridget Hurd. This is a collection of reprints of the seminal punk rock zine from the 70s, which the film sort of starts off with that, and Holmstrom did some animations and stuff in the film. And that magazine featured interviews and comics and all kinds of stuff. And Alan Rickman was not involved with either of those projects. Amanda?
Are you sure you're done? Do you want to go?
Okay. I extemporized. I was speaking extemporaneously, which is why I went so long.
I knew it was going to be bad when he started by talking about what Mike was going to talk about later, but go for it.
Okay. Well, mine's kind of short. So.
Wait, let's do an episode where we just review my performance.
There would be enough time.
Yeah, that's it.
EPPR.
You know, we could do an All Jeremy tribute episode, but it'd be 6 hours long.
It would be six. Okay, so anyway. So most folks, I think, would be familiar with Rickman because of his Hans Gruber Snape characters that he has played. Those are his two favorite, or two most popular characters.
Hans Gruber Snape.
The Hans Gruber Snapes.
Hello, Mr. McLean and Mr. Potter.
I am going today to talk about one of my all-time super favorite movies, Love Actually. And if you're like half the people in this room and you haven't seen this movie, it needs to be the next thing you watch.
Nope.
I have seen the movie.
Which I can say because I haven't seen half the movies you guys talk about. So.
Yeah.
I have seen Love Actually, pretty much watch it every Christmas.
You have to. It's a rule. It's part of the canon now.
This holiday season, I'm picking up join this unforgettable filmmaking team.
Welcome, Prime Minister. This is Natalie. Hello, David. I mean, sir.
20 years ago, you'd have been just his type.
As they explore that time of year, when desires are revealed.
I'm in love.
Aren't you a bit young to be in love?
No.
Okay.
Secrets are exposed.
Your secretary is very pretty.
Is she?
Be careful, then.
And chances are finally taken.
All I want for Christmas is you.
Universal Pictures invites you.
What's the best sex you've ever had?
Britney Spears. No, only kidding. She was rubbish.
To take everything you know about love.
You have this kind of problem?
Yeah, of course you did, you saucy mings.
And multiply it by 8.
Would you excuse me for 1 second? Okay, that's done. This will be
Hugh Grant, Liam Neeson, Colin Firth, Laura Linney, Emma Thompson, Alan Rickman, Rowan Atkinson, Keira Knightley.
Christmas is the time to be with the people you love.
Yeah, I need a car.
This holiday season.
Does Natalie live here?
All you need.
Oh.
Hello.
Is love, actually.
Are you seeing carols?
I suppose I could.
Please, sir, please.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen. When the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even.
So I will admit that, yes, it is a finger quotes girl movie. And yes, it is finger quotes schmoopy. But there is definitely...
Yeah, a bit schmoopy.
Yeah. But there is more to it. It's about a bunch of different stories that kind of weave in and out of each other as the movie goes on. I think it's probably one of the most well-written films I've seen just because of all the weaving in and out. And for me, I watch it and think, how did they do that? So Rickman plays an older gentleman who runs a London publishing company. His character's name is Harry, which I didn't even realize until I was working on this podcast because it totally doesn't matter. Like, it's not a big deal what his name is. His much younger secretary is stereotypically in love with him, but she is actively trying to seduce him. His wife is played by Emma Thompson, and she cautions him against this after the company's Christmas party where things get a little rowdy. Choices are made and events unravel with consequences for everyone involved. Now, Rickman's storyline isn't really my favorite in the movie because there are points when you want to just slap him upside the head for being that stupid stereotypical middle-aged man. But it's definitely necessary to the plot line. So like Harry Potter, which Brian's going to talk about in a minute, spoiler alert, Love Actually is made up of an all-star British cast that includes Bill Nye, Colin Firth, Liam Neeson, Keira Knightley, and I'm gonna guess this Chiwetel Ejiofor. Like, I don't know if you, that's
Chiwetel
how you say it.
Chiwetel Ejiofor, I think.
Okay, I was close. And I think it's a testament to his acting chops that Rickman is in both of these big British blockbusters. And just a chronological FYI, Love Actually came out after the second Harry Potter movie, so he wasn't quite as big of a super Snape superstar then when Love Actually came out as he is now. But for me, it was nice to see Rickman as something other than Snape, having, of course, not seen him in Die Hard.
Also in that movie, interesting enough, is Andrew Lincoln, now zombie killer on The Walking Dead.
Who's Andrew Lincoln? What's his character in
Love
Actually?
He's the guy with the sign.
He's in love with Keira Knightley.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's the sign guy. Okay.
Yeah, nice. Sure. Rick Grimes.
The people that I always point out now is like what's wrong with romantic comedies is that the Andrew Lincoln character is seen as romantic even though he's a creepy stalker. Yeah.
He was cute.
Coral.
I do have two things. I just find it amusing that you both have the, like, unofficial Christmas movie for, like, both genders. Die Hard and Love Actually.
We cover this band here at the Pop
like,
Podcast.
Yeah, it's like old Alan Rickman, just loves unofficial Christmas movies.
Was he in Silent Night, Deadly Night? We'll cover another.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Editor's note. Great segue. No, really.
Bees! The Final Frontier. The ease of the voyages of the SS Popmatic, our mission, to recommend strange new items, to seek out new pop culture ephemera, to boldly go, where many nerds have gone before. Believe it or not, that was the eighth introduction I wrote this morning, one of which was just Star Trek, parodies, writer's block, Galaxy Quest. Ha!
I like that one.
Writer's block.
Seriously, I was like, I could like talk about parodies and Airplane. No, I could talk about Galaxy Quest is a movie from 1999, as Jeremy mentioned, about a group of struggling actors who briefly worked on a cult science fiction television show in the 80s. Tim Allen plays Jason Nesmith, who is the captain on the show, who has an estranged relationship with his former castmates. Sigourney Weaver plays Gwen DeMarco, who's kind of like Uhura. I mean, she's the communications officer. And Hans Gruber plays Leonard Nimoy, the half-alien science officer.
Hans Gruber Snape.
Oh, right. Sounds like his, like, married name. Like,
I know.
He married himself.
Like,
I'm Ryan Ames. I've changed it to Hans Gruber Snape. Good one, honey. Then he kisses himself on the lips and...
Wow. Let's turn it to the Alan Rickman slash cast.
So, none of them have gotten decent paying work after the end of the show, which is coincidentally called Galaxy Quest. So, they have been slumming it and working at various light science fiction conventions. At the beginning of the film, they're working at the opening of a grocery store in Los Angeles, which prompts one of my favorite lines of the whole movie, where Alan Rickman, who's playing a Shakespearean trained actor who's been knighted by the Queen and finds this all beneath him, is reduced to saying his character's catchphrases for money. So, they cut the ribbon to the grocery store, and Alan Rickman says, with his voice oozing with contempt,
"By Grabthar's hammer, what a savings."
All right. Yeah, let's hear it.
Eventually, the entire cast plus Sam Rockwell, who plays a red shirt in one episode, and actually this whole movie would be a great companion piece to Amanda's previous recommended book, Red Shirts, gets abducted by aliens who are called the Thermians, who believe that Galaxy Quest was a series of historical reenactments, and that the actors are actual heroes who will save them from another alien species led by a one-eyed reptilian giant named Saris, who's played by Robin Sachs, who was a character on Buffy, who I did not write it down, but apparently he was a big deal.
Mr. Sachs played Ethan Rain on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Did a lot of people on Babylon 5. It's really cool. Anyway, the Thermians even recreated the original starship, the Protector, complete with warp drives that make no sense. Weirdly enough, everything works. Like, all the actors eventually realize that this minor crap job that they took for money and that they, like, feels beneath them actually inspired people and or entire alien species. The Thermians had this, like, sweet naivete about them, which is really charming. It's like their entire race of grinning, like, little puppies.
The jokes are really, really funny, even when you see it multiple times. That, for example, that since Sam Rockwell plays a redshirt, he constantly assumes he's going to die, like, pretty much all the time. He's all like, I was crewman number six. You guys had names. I didn't have a name. I'm going to die. Like, runs in opposite direction all the time. It's very funny. And at one point, the characters call up a nerd on Earth to look up on how to get to the secret weapon called the Omega 13. It's quite funny if you like the sort of meta humor thing. I need to quit putting out when things are funny because that makes them not funny. But I had a good time. You know, Jeremy should see this. Amanda should see this.
Amanda should see this.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a very sweet list. Movie. I just haven't gotten there.
I always thought there was a scene in it where Sigourney Weaver at one point. All she does is repeat what the lead character says. Well, that's all my character did on the show. She
quit yelling at me. That's my one job, and I'm going to do it.
I think I thought it was like I thought it was like the Santa Claus in space or something when it came out. Like, I just thought.
You have Tim Allen issues.
Tim Allen, he is also a Toy Story. I mean,
Also Stan Winston did the effects on Creatures, and it's really got great creature effects in it.
Yeah.
Is it funnier if you hate Star Trek, or is it funnier if you're a Star Trek fan and you're like self-aware fandom? I mean, it is a little meta.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think there is a lot of in jokes if you're not familiar with Star Trek fandom that maybe you wouldn't get. But at the same time, the people that really like Star Trek maybe don't like Galaxy Quest.
I was thinking originally, I was going to say, like, you don't really need to know the ins and outs of Star Trek. It just assumes you've got, like, a pop culture service knowledge. It's not like they're referencing specific episodes or anything.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be okay.
I know that Will Wheaton was like, that movie to me wasn't a comedy. It was a tragedy because that's my life. He's like, so that's like, that's just like, it's not funny at all. Like, to me, when I watch that movie, it just makes me sad.
And I love it.
That makes it funny for me.
It must be great.
So, but anyway, back to Mr. Rickman. I was going to point out that he has worked with Emma Thompson a lot throughout his career. Mm-hmm. So they worked on Sense and Sensibility. And she also was in the Harry Potter movies. Mm-hmm. She played one of the professors. Can't remember her name.
Trelawney.
Okay. But anyway, I've talked about my personal history with Harry Potter before. I've never read the books.
Boo!
I don't care about these.
I'm taking your library card away. Woo. I don't take mine all the time.
I don't care about these kids.
I gotta hide my library card.
I don't care about these kids' books, whatever. There's been 100 wizard stories. I don't care. But I've talked about, like, my wife. She went to go see these movies with her siblings because they were younger and they were into the books. And then, as they got older, she was into the movies. I had to go see the movies with her when they came out. Also, the last Harry Potter books and the first few movies came out when I was in library school, so it was just totally unavoidable. Like, it was just permeated everywhere. So I've seen all of the Harry Potter films, and I can tell you that the star of the Harry Potter films is Professor Severus Snape. As played by Alan Rickman, he steals every scene.
Turn to page 394.
Excuse me, sir. Where's Professor Lupin?
That's not really your concern, is it, Potter? Suffice it to say that your professor finds himself incapable of teaching at the present time. Turn to page 394.
Werewolves?
But, sir, we've just begun learning about red caps and hinky punks. We're not meant to start nocturnal beasts for weeks.
Quiet.
When did she come in? Did you see her come in?
Now, which one of you can tell me the difference between an animagus and a werewolf? No one. How disappointing.
Please, sir, an animagus is a wizard who elects to turn into an animal. A werewolf has no choice. With each full moon, when he transforms, he no longer remembers who he is. He'd kill his best friend if he crossed his path. Furthermore, the werewolf only responds to the call of its own kind.
Oh!
Thank you, Mr. Malfoy. That is the second time you've spoken out of turn, Miss Granger. Are you incapable of restraining yourself, or do you take pride in being an insufferable know-it-all?
He's got a point, you know.
5 points from Gryffindor. As an antidote to your ignorance, and on my desk by Monday morning, 2 rolls of parchment on the werewolf, with particular emphasis on recognizing it.
Sir, it's Quidditch tomorrow.
Then I suggest you take extra care, Mr. Potter. loss of limb will not excuse you. Page 394.
He's the big, scary, mean teacher. I think that his costume helps a lot. He has like shoe polish, black hair, and this like what is that called? The thing that he wears that's all like buttoned up. It's almost like
robe.
It's almost something like from Hellraiser though, like that he wears. It's just like super deep, dark jet black. And mm-hmm. when he's physically in a scene, he's almost like a black hole that like sucks energy in. And it's like, and I think that if it was any other actor, it would stink. But because Alan Rickman is such an amazing actor with just his face and his posture and his presence, he can just sell it. Because actually, doesn't have that much screen time,
mm-mm.
but his role in the story is pivotal.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say besides Harry, he is the most complex character. Though I think you can make an argument for Dumbledore too, but besides Harry, he's the most complex character in the story. And I'm not going to give away.
I think as the story went on too, he was the most argued about character.
Even
more than Harry. I mean,
he steals the scene. He's complicated. I'm not going to give away any spoilers just for those other curmudgeons,
the two
jerks.
Of you out there that...
Curmudgeons, jerks, and other malcontents that have never read the books or seen the movies.
I saw three of those movies. One of them had dragons in it. It was cool.
So, I've seen Star Wars. I don't need to see another Chosen One.
We'll get to that. So
I've seen all the Death Wish films.
So he's...
That's awesome.
I don't know if I'd be proud of that.
I'm the Chosen. Hey, Belly, I'm the Chosen One.
This ain't over.
As Amanda said, Snape was one of the most talked about, argued about characters. Rickman was one of the few actors that knew what was going to happen in the Harry Potter books before they actually came out, because J.K. Rowling had to tell him so he would know how to play his character. It's been pointed out that he should have won all the awards for best supporting actor for his role as Snape. Now, I am indifferent to the books. I'm sure that they're good, but I've seen all the movies. I can tell you that the movies are fantastic. For this podcast, I rewatched the last two, which is like one big movie, Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, and it reminded me how much that new Star Wars movie totally sucked.
All right, hot take.
The other thing, there was a few years ago, there was a hipster formalist experiment called Boyhood, where they took a kid and photographed him every day.
I remember falling asleep watching that, yes.
They took a kid and took a photograph of him every day for a year or something. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
So many hot takes. Hot takes.
Formalist experiment.
Okay, wow. I'm kidding. I like that movie. I was very happy when
it ended.
Patricia Arquette.
I was
really happy. I was really happy when Patricia Arquette won Academy Award for that. But when I think back at what they did with the Harry Potter films, being so brave to cast 7 movies at once.
There were 8 Harry Potter films because the last book was split into 2 movies.
Stick with all the same actors. That was such a chance, and the world that they created is fantastic. Think of the pressure. Other than The Lord of the Rings, I don't think there was more pressure to do an intellectual property right, and they totally did. And it was probably harder because they were little kids when they started. Everyone got older. And only one actor died along the way. None of the actors, like, threw hissy fits and didn't come back or whatever.
Some guy got arrested for murder.
Recently,
right? But... Yeah, like a bully or something. Yeah.
It happens.
He was a bully. He was a typecast.
Who did, like, the riots in London?
They've tried to do... There have been so many, like, false starts. Like, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter are the only ones that have succeeded because they tried the His Dark Materials and even the Narnia books. Like, they only got a couple of those.
The Mortal Instruments again.
Yeah.
My point, the Harry Potter films are an amazing accomplishment. Sure. I mean, just a tremendous artistic accomplishment, which took literally, like, you know, more than a decade to make, and all of them are good. It's amazing. Now, get out your quote book. I wish I had kids so I could share the world of Harry Potter with them.
One.
Poor brain children.
And if, you know...
This is noise music, children.
It's fun. What's going
on?
It's fun.
Why is there no melody?
It's fun for me to diss the books, but I believe all my librarian brethren my fellow wizards that the books are excellent and are children's literature that will live on in the canon.
Absolutely.
And I think it would be great to have children and be able to share the books and the movies with them. I like the movies so much that I regret that I won't. Right now, I'm not able to do that.
I think the thing that will hurt the books going forward, I think that people will still read them, certainly, but the thing that solidified their success was that the people that they were targeted at obviously adults and everybody likes it too, but like the children that they were targeted at when the books came out, the kids were that age, and then the next book came out and the characters all aged along with that core readership. And now my son could sit down and read all seven of them, you know, and in a couple of months or whatever, but still be at the first level. So kind of, I don't think that will.
It's still the story though. It's still progresses. I mean, that's how life is.
But I think there's something to that sort of like.
It won't be quite as visceral.
Yeah, exactly. Like growing up with them.
Should we be plugging the upcoming prequel series with Eddie Redmayne?
No, because Alan Rickman isn't in it.
Yeah. Also, it's hard to go back to the well.
Not going to work. It's like an 80-page book, and they're making three movies out of it. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's going to be really good.
Wow, that's like The Hobbit.
I just wanted to say back to Alan Rickman that I had read the books before I saw the movie, like you're supposed to. And I would say that Alan Rickman does not look like what Severus Snape looked like in my head. Like, he was, I don't know, he seems more normal than the way Snape is portrayed in the book, but he sold me on it as the movies progressed. Like, now, when I think of Severus Snape, I think of Alan Rickman.
So the first actor was Tim Roth. They wanted, do you know that? Mm-hmm. You know him?
Mm-hmm.
But he turned it down for
Planet of the Apes.
Oh, ooh, I bet he's kicking himself now.
Yes, sir, I like Tim Roth.
Good job.
I mean, Tim Roth is great, but. I mean, now I'm like you. Of all the fantasy, like, you know, I can think of Frodo Baggins and not think of Elijah Wood. Mm-hmm. I can think of Gandalf and not think of Ian McKellen.
I couldn't even tell you the guy's name.
I cannot think. He has this great T-shirt that says "I'm Gandalf and Magneto, deal with it." And he wears it at Gay Pride parades. But anyway.
That's a good T-shirt.
That's amazing.
I cannot think of Snape without thinking of Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Hey guys.
Hey Bill.
Hey Bill.
I forgot the word.
What do we do?
What do we do on?
What do we do
on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, the library has it.
Maybe
it's out of order. But either way, it's Tickle Your Fancy, possibly in the media bank. Amanda.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay, so thanks. That was a great introduction, guys. So with the kickoff of March comes the beginning of my favorite time of year, also known as severe weather season.
Woo.
Severe Weather Awareness Week officially runs from February 28th to March 5th. So much like Mike takes over October for all of his fun horror movies / books, I am going to make March my own month of weather. Now, I don't have a really cool name for it, though. Like, Shocktober is so cool, but, like, nothing works with March.
Somebody thinks it's cool.
I can't really call it Marchtober, but that's kind of fun. So I'll work on it. We've got a couple weeks here. All my tickle fancies are going to be about weather stuff. Some is fiction, some is nonfiction, all is fun. The first book I'm going to talk about is called The Storm of the Century by Al Roker. Now, let me first start off by saying I am not a big fan of the Rokemeister.
If you ever want to, like, have your nightmares, like, made worse, try to, like, look at them play the Charlie Brown characters that they did once in the Today Show. He played Charlie Brown.
Scared. Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
So, okay, if I had to make up an analogy, I would say I am to professional chefs as Al Roker is to official meteorologists. Yes, he can talk about the weather when folks tell him what to say, but he's not making up his own forecast. I don't even know if he's a trained me. I don't even know if he's certified.
Somebody burns this episode. I need to go to burn ward.
So I was initially leery about reading a weather book from him, but his book talks about the big Galveston hurricane in 1900 that wiped out half the population of the coastal city. This was also covered in one of my favorite weather books called Isaac Storm by Eric Larson, which I've mentioned before. And I will admit that the beginning of Roker's book draws, let's say, very heavily on Larson's book. I kind of bounced back and forth between thinking, gee, I've already read this, to feeling like I was in an episode of The Today Show where he was jumping back and forth between 8-minute segments.
Let's see what's happening in your neck of the woods.
Yes, exactly. It's raining. So it wasn't until the second section of the book, when the storm finally hit, that I started to get a better sense of the storyline. And after that point, I stopped thinking about Al Roker and started thinking about the events unfolding on the page. There were some new storylines as well on the cleanup of the storm and how reporters had to sneak onto the island to get their stories after the fact. And I also like how he didn't dwell quite so much on the events during the storm, and he didn't prolong the agony and fear of that night. Overall, I would say that Isaac Storm is still better, but if you want additional information, then Roker's Storm of the Century is not a bad option. And if you're a fan of Al Roker, you may not have the issues that I did with it. My biggest complaint is that I wish Roker would have written about an event that he actually covered, say, I don't know, Hurricane Sandy, because that would have had a little bit more firsthand.
He also covered a Sharknado.
So yeah, I mean the book was good, but I didn't really need weather history with Al. So.
Well, this week three things decided me, and so I know that I did not want to incur the never-ending anger and rage that is Brian. So I thought.
Oh, I that I outsourced the editing. I just sent it off to some company. It's like $50 a pop. They send it back.
There you go. It's pop sourcing. So I thought that I would flip a coin. I got two different ones.
Wow.
Ooh. Interactive segment, gang. Oh, boy. Ah, so.
Excellent sound effect.
Aren't you supposed to roll for initiative or something like that?
Plus one. Minus two. So this week, I thought I'd talk about a Patricia Highsmith double feature. Ooh, I had a luck with...
I still got to talk about two things.
Yeah, see? That's how it works out. I had three things I'm going to talk about, too.
This cake is delicious. I'm glad I have it.
So, Carol is the story of a love affair between two women in the 1950s, played by Rudy Mara and Kate Blanchett. I suppose it's old hat to a lot of people, but I've never seen a love story like that before, with all the, like, coding and, like, you know, secretiveness. You'll notice that at the beginning of the film where a male friend puts his hand on Mara's shoulder and she really like could not care less. But when Carol puts her hand on her shoulder, like she melts. It's like, ooh,
wow. Shmoopy.
Yeah, it's very, Also notice how useless all the men in the movie are. I heard that it may have not been nominated for Best Picture due to the Bisandry.
Bisandry.
What? Which is abusing.
The Hollywood Academy is not a bunch of old white men.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
I thought it was kind of refreshing in like, you know, the abusing way. Also, I saw last weekend The American Friend, an adaptation of Highsmith's Ripley's Game. We have that in the collection. At least we have American Friend. I don't know if I believe it's a game.
The library owns Ripley's Game in print.
In a way, the movie's almost like a 1970s Breaking Bad. Bruno Ganz plays a professional framer who's told he has a fatal disease. A crime syndicate recruits him to become an assassin, and he takes the job to provide for his family. Dennis Hopper plays Ripley as a crazy young American whose motivations are never totally clear, who decides to help him out for some reason. It's pretty cool. At first, you know, I was actually kind of mad at both movies, but they grew on me over time. They're, like, pretty amazing. So one of these days, I think I'll go on a Highsmith actually reading binge. I have seen Strangers on a Train, but it's been a long time. So what have we got?
Okay. Well, since Halloween is right around the corner.
It is for us.
Yeah.
Every day is Halloween in Mike's house.
Yeah, yeah.
I just recently discovered this on YouTube. I hope there's not copyright problems, but there probably is. But I'm talking about it anyway. It's called Clive Barker's A to Z of Horror. And this was a 6-part series that I thoroughly enjoyed that he did for the BBC. And it covers a lot of different topics, but what was great about it, it covered these two writers that are rarely discussed, Dennis Wheatley and Shirley Jackson.
Wow.
And it goes into their careers quite a bit. And like I said, this documentary aired on the BBC in 1997. I highly recommend it. That's, like I said, it was a 6-part series. However, episode one you can watch, but you can't listen to it, and it's kind of a shame. The audio track has been muted because of copyright problems. However, you can watch 2 through 6, and I highly recommend them. So it's Clive Barker's A to Z of Horror.
Whoa. Cool.
And
Jeremy.
Well,
This time next week, hopefully, my fancy will be tickled by the Netflix original series Fuller House. But for now, tickling my fancy this week is So Tonight That I Might See by Mazzy Star. I've been listening to this in my car. The song Fade Into You, it was my favorite MTV Buzz clip of all time. It's from this 1993 album and is maybe the most upbeat song on what is otherwise a very druggy and drony record. Upon hearing this album when I was a child, a small teenager, one of my friends said, "This would be a good music to do heroin to," which was really stupid because none of us would ever do heroin. And also,
wink, wink.
Also, Kurt Cobain had just died, man. Not cool. So anyway, I can't speak to doing heroin to it, but it's a good album to listen to because that's what music is for. mostly for Hope Sandoval's voice, which is very beautiful. And it's a very dreamy, but also like slightly nightmarish album, but like maybe not quite like a scary nightmare, more like, oh, what just happened in that dream? Doesn't make any sense. We have this album on CD here at the main library. Also, their entire catalog is on Hoopla. And we also have Hope Sandoval's solo work on there too, Hoopla. So check it out.
Corrections. I don't have any corrections.
I got some.
I'll go, like, you go first. Mine don't have a correction.
Oh, okay.
Mine's a comment.
Brian, I understood the context of your Big Ears Festival recommendation, but I think you should have prefaced it with like 17 minutes of childhood reminiscing to give it more
Jeremiah
it. Yeah. Oh, a Jeremiah, is it?
No, you were talking about it because it only happened. It happened for a long time, and then it stopped happening, and then it started happening again. That was clear to me because I think we talked about it prior, but I don't know.
I got it.
Anyway.
I got it just from knowing Brian.
Yeah, well,
I should have emphasized that more. I also did something that I would probably yell at you guys about and probably cut. I talked about what it was, when it was happening, and then I talked about, like, two featured composers.
Yes.
Oh, so yeah.
I just picked one. Should have just picked Laurie Anderson or John Luther Adams. Okay, I'm done.
Also, you said Sun Ra Orchestra. And it's Sun Ra Orchestra.
Oh!
And I mentioned
the place.
I mentioned the PMRC, but I didn't say what it what that stands for. It stands for the Parents Music Resource Center. Tipper Gore was a component of that group. They gave us the lovely parental advisory sticker, which appears on physical media if that still exists. Mike Ghost sounds like one of those bands that I carried around in my margarine tub.
Woo!
In the 80s.
Yeah.
And also, I wanted to know what the
margarine was.
What, I can live with that.
Brian pointed this out to me. Was the kangaroo caucus joke a Gary from Perth reference? Or was it just a bad joke?
It fell so flat.
Well, you know, I was doing like Leap Year and Rare Things and
Leap.
Yes, leaping.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get it now.
It's still not funny, but we did need the explanation.
Yeah, I get it.
Jokes don't work when you have to explain them, guys.
That's true.
But I love you had to explain
that. That would explain how good my joke was.
But now that you explain it, if I had put those things together, which I don't know why I didn't,
yeah,
I would have said like frog caucus because it sounds cooler.
I did a leaping.
Yeah, no, that makes more sense.
You did have a leaping joke earlier.
Yeah. That's all I got. Sorry.
Yeah, I have some clarifications, not necessarily corrections, I guess. If you're curious about what other kind of metal bands I was into, go back to the Best of Day 15 episode where I briefly mentioned Nightwish and recommended Sabaton. Remember Sabaton? Now picture, you know, instead of war heroes, they're talking about dragons and elves, and that's all I listened to for about my entire college experience. And I know I tend to exaggerate in the show for comedic effect. Why, in real life, I'm a mild-mannered, quiet guy who liked Best Picture nominee Brooklyn until the last third. She had no chemistry with Domhnall Gleeson. Of course, she's going to go back to America to be with her Italian husband. Ah, pish-posh, guys. No chemistry.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, but know this. Tomatoes on a sandwich are the worst creation in the history of mankind. I have long resigned myself to having to ask every sandwich artist until I die to remove vile, bitter death circles that Mondays inexplicably like. Tune in next week when I compare Auto-Tune to fellow culinary atrocity walnuts on brownies.
Why? Why?
Why
do you have to ruin? I'm looking forward to that. Also, my husband eats all the tomatoes you take off, like he puts on.
So. I only eat tomatoes on sandwiches. Like a fresh tomato?
Nope.
Like a raw tomato?
Nope.
On a sandwich, delicious. By itself, not so much.
I had a fried green tomato like a couple weeks ago. It was amazing.
Had those, it's good.
I was like, I don't want to eat this.
You
and
fry
I ate
anything
it.
And it's good.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Really good.
Yeah.
I would just like to add that Brian's secret super Easter egg at the end of the show is the best super secret Easter egg ever.
I don't remember.
It's a Freakazoid.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
So good. I've done so many shows.
I did the happy dance, but I was listening to him like, he's running off. So, thank you.
I remember liking it, then immediately forgot what it was.
I wanted to put it in the show, but I couldn't. It didn't. Couldn't make it fit. And the show was really
freaking
long anyway.
Freaky you.
That'll be help. Runs around in underwear. Freaky Zoid.
I gotta hit up some of that. Watch some of that.
Oh, man.
For more information about canceled Saturday morning cartoons, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam B.
Memory Challenge. Next week, our show is
weather.
Oh, yeah.
Some kind of weather. Thundersnow. Thundersnow.
I've never seen thundersnow.
I heard it. I heard it.
Never
January 20th.
It happened. My best friend saw it. I'm like, you get thundersnow.
I heard it happened here. I
yes.
heard it. It was awesome.
Yes. I never have enjoyed it.
I'm sitting at my table.
It's kind of like a thing.
Yeah. It's awesome.
We're stealing our best material that we could use next week. I'm going.
I have more.
To save it. Oh,
we always, you know, reference things we did the previous week.
Oh. I'm going on record. There's no such thing as thundersnow. There's no such thing as freezing fog.
But what about ball lightning?
But there's trains. We're going to talk about trains.
Oh, yeah. It's weather for four of us and train news
Brian
for one of us. This week, train spotting.
Trains. Damn it. Damn you. You know, Thomas the Tank Engine.
You know, it's like its 20th anniversary recently, so you could tell
me train spotting?
Yeah.
They're working on a sequel. Danny Boyle is apparently.
Weird. They're all zombies.
Yeah, how did they survive for 20 years?
Al Roker is a fascinating figure.
You can interview him, right?
Oh, man.
I have no beef with Al Roker.
I do.
Okay, well, good. I mean, don't really like him either.
We could all read his weather mysteries.
Totally.
Yeah, like
weather mysteries.
Willard Scott is the bomb.
.com.
I can't
she
wait.
She is 102 years young today.
Yeah. Did he die, Willard Scott?
No, I think
he just retired. Yeah. Yeah.
Thing. All the weather episode on this week's Alan Rickman episode. You don't know what.
Wow, the forecast is for weather news.
Do you know Willard Scott was like one of the original Ronald McDonalds?
I did
yes.
hear that.
Yeah. Terrifying one, too.
This is my shocked face.
Now I'm afraid of him.